Richard Slotkin is our guest here on the Paula Gordon Show. Thank you, Bill Russell, for letting me have one more question of Richard Slotkin.
Your name's over the door.
You have an extensive experience with English literature and American literature. You're an historian by trade and craft, but you really have gone poking around in who we are since the very earliest days. Was it obvious? You had the entire candy store available to you in ways that most people just don't. And yet you came back to Lincoln. You could have picked anybody. So two questions. Again, why Lincoln? And if there'd been a number two, who would it have been?
Well, let me ask the second one first. There can only be one number one at any one time. I've had other number ones at different times. My first choice of a hero was in a Civil War novel I did, and it was actually a group of guys. I couldn't find one.
In the Crater,
a novel about the battle of that name. My second novel, Return of Henry Starr, I picked a half-Cherokee social bandit from the turn of the century who goes around looking, wants to be a hero, and goes around at the end of the novel looking for the gunfight at the OK Corral and winds up in the middle of the Tulsa race riot. So Lincoln is not my only one, but I guess with the whole sandbox to play in, he's the man who seems to me the man of the moment, the man who stands as the man. He's the one who defined what power means to an American: legitimate power, national power, power to do good, power to do evil. He's the man who makes the nation. Washington's the father of the country. Lincoln's the father of the nation. And the other thing is that he's the man who, at the most heroic moment, confronted the problem of race and did something definitive about it, and was stopped before he could make the fullness of his answer to that question manifest.
You are also pretty clear that Lincoln wasn't acting out of context, that all that was happening around him, that social forces, I mean, this is not sort of stupid history,
this is
big history.
No, but it's filtered through a single human consciousness, because for the reader to experience that full context of the play of powers and influences, I think it has to be vicariously through someone's consciousness.
Is that the role of myth?
That's one of the roles of myth, yes, to allow the reader, to allow the listener to enter into the consciousness of another time, another place, a story in which he or she might potentially someday be an actor, or an analogous kind of story they might be an actor.
John Keegan asserts that wars are inevitable when the values between culture societies are irreconcilable. And what you're describing sounds like we are in danger, the crisis you refer to, a muddle in my mind, that we're at risk in the absence of well-articulated shared values, that is to say, shared myths.
I think that's right. I think we are in some danger. I do see, though, a greater disposition to accommodate, to adjust, to admit new peoples, not only into the mythic stories, but to give them a hand in the making of those stories. My own situation as the son of Jewish immigrants, writing the American story, I'm allowed to do that. And people welcome my doing that and don't question my credentials. I think that's a very positive, I take it as a very positive sign.
Well, then we'll take it as a positive sign, too. We thank you, Richard Slotkin.
Thank you very much.
Abe is a great read. Thank you for making it accessible and for bringing all of those years of being a historian to it as well.
Thank you very much for saying that.
You're very welcome. Professor Slotkin's novel, Abe, does just what he promised. It opens up possibilities. Thank you, Richard Slotkin. I'm Paula Gordon. I wish you well.